WKOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. I'll be back in just a few minutes. All right, good evening to y'all. It's Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Mid-Missouri source for in-depth news, diverse talk, music from all around the world. You're listening to it now, and every Monday at 11 p.m., we do it for 3 hours, from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. in the morning. Monday nights, Radio Orbit comes to you on KOPN 89.5 FM, and we come right on the tail end of a wonderful radio program called Free Range Radio Theater. And my good friend Debbie Johnson, who does that particular project. And thanks to Debbie for doing a great program, as always, tonight. A very unimportant person. Great show. Great stuff, as always. Kevin and Jason doing it up before that. Jazz plus blues equals Twin Towers. Tech radio, informative, as always, keeping us up in the world of high technology. Jeff Wheeler starts things off every Monday with Uncommon Light, 3 to 5 p.m. Great music, talk, news, wonderful radio on KOPN, your imagination station. Glad to be here with you and part of it, all of it. And thanks to everyone who listened to the program last week. I enjoyed it a great deal. Nearly 3 hours with the remarkable Paul Laffoley. Hope you enjoyed it too. Also heard the music of the Bastard Fairies, generating a lot of comments again. Man, they really get people fired up. I don't know why, but you know, some folks really like them, and some just cannot stand them. I don't know why. I mean, because when I listen to the music, it's not that offensive. I mean, at least the way it, you know, the music itself. I mean, I've heard stuff that's much more grating or something. I don't know. Maybe it's just their indignation or something. But at any rate, that's the way it goes, you know. Such is life. Some you like, some you don't. Anything associated with Paul Laffoley these days is a bit controversial, though. And I actually, maybe now's the time. I'm sort of picking back and forth between my email because I'm supposed to talk with Michael and Star sometime during this first hour, but I've yet to get contact numbers on how to get a hold of them. And I'm hoping that they call me or send me an email or something. But at any rate, there was something I wanted to say about the whole Laffoley 9/11 affair. Just a couple things to just sort of put it to sleep, at least my end of it. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, good for you. You know, you can listen to the old Paul Laffoley interviews if you're interested in it, okay? But the whole business came up out of nowhere, you know, when Paul and I first spoke in February, without any intention from either of us. You know, neither one of us had any intention of talking about politics or, you know, political intrigue or 9/11 or any of that stuff. You know, so it was not intended, but there was this 10-minute clip, I don't know, 10 minutes or so, in, you know, during the course of a 3-hour interview in which we talked about many, many different topics. At any rate, during this particular clip, Paul was talking about his early career and how he'd been thrown out of the Harvard Design School for being too creative, essentially. But at any rate, had eventually ended up, thanks to the help of Friedrich Kiesler, in the office of Emery Roth and Sons, and was on the design team for the World Trade Center in the early 60s when Minoru Yamasaki and the whole gang were putting this whole thing together. So anyway, he talked about his experiences there and the things that he said, some of them at least generated considerable anxiety for a lot of people. And for 3 months, I've been receiving all kinds of email berating me as a kook or berating me as a disinformation agent spreading propaganda. I've been called a terrorist. I've had other people say, great job, amazing stuff with the Paul Laffoley 9/11 revelations. Now what are you going to do, run for your life? You know, all kinds of stuff, right, for 3 months. So, you know, Paul and I had agreed to do another program anyway, so I had to eventually ask him if he would clarify it. You know, because there were so many people that were hounding me about it, basically. So, anyway, Paul said that he simply wanted people to know what he knew. And he just wanted it to be out there. And he said that he felt that that had been done, that he had done that. And his advice for others who wanted further evidence or verification or whatever was to begin, obviously, with Emery Roth and Sons and find a way to get to their archives. They remain in business, I think, as an interior design firm. I don't think they do building design anymore. But anyway, dig this, by the way. I, I, I was looking, I Googled the archives of Emory Roth, and I find a story that was, that came out on the 14th of February. Now, I interviewed Paul on the 12th of February, you know, and rolled over to the 13th. On the 14th of February, no kidding, one day afterwards, my initial interview with Paul Laffley, in which he first talked about all of this, the Columbia University Avery Architectural and Fine Arts Library received a grant to, quote-unquote, preserve these very same archives, the post-World War II archives of Emory Roth and Sons. There's a story at the Columbia University website about it. Anyway, so there's a synchronicity for you, or I don't know what you call it. But the most remarkable thing that I find about the whole business, and the one thing that makes me highly confident in what Paul is saying, is the fact that since our first interview in February, where I've gotten all this crap, you know, after the release of this information on the World Trade Center that Paul had to mention, not one journalist has contacted him to elaborate further. Not one other radio show has invited him to speak. Not one newspaper reporter, not one television news reporter, etc., etc., etc. Nobody in nearly 4 months. And after that little 10-minute MP3 bombshell had gone viral on the net, nobody contacted Paul Laffley to this day. And for me, it seems that there's only one reason. He's too hot to handle. He's an eyewitness, a master architect who worked at the scene, an ex-employee who's smart, he's savvy, he's articulate, he has an impeccable memory. And regardless of his speculation on the way in which the charges may have eventually been set off, the fact of built-in charges in the World Trade Center towers brings down the house on the official story. And that was my only interest with regard to 9/11, you know, to show that the official story is bunk. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, Paul Laffley's information clearly does that. Lastly, it's my opinion, and this came out last week, but it's my strong opinion that the W.C. Grace and Company and the Knights of Malta connection is a real one. And it is directly related to this whole insurance fraud, you know, that's a big part of the whole 9/11 conspiracy, which it is. Anyway, I did a whole bunch of work on this a few years ago with Kent Stedman on this whole W.C. Grace Halliburton insulation vermiculite problem of theirs. And it's a big problem. And if you look into this, you'll find out that it is connected to the World Trade Center story. All right? Anyway, it makes more sense to me now since I've heard the stuff that Paul has had to say. Take a look when you can, if you get a chance, to go over to Kent Stedman's site at cyberspaceorbit.com. I want to thank Kent for, you know, sticking with this and putting all this stuff up on his site. And also, there's a great journalist out there, a newsman named Kent Daniel Benkowski, and he runs a website called the Kentroversy Papers. And you can find that at kentroversypapers.blogspot.com. And he's doing good work, too, and he was one of the few people that picked up on this thread and recognized that it was important. So thanks to both of the Kents out there, Kent Stedman, my brother, of course, and Kent Daniel Benkowski at kentroversypapers.blogspot.com. All right, if you missed the show, it's all on the web, www.mikehagan.com, in the program archives. Tonight, a wonderful woman named Elaine Matthews. She's got a great book that's called The Heartbeat of Intelligence. And we'll talk with Elaine in just a little bit here at the top of the hour. On the web, if you want to get a leg up, just hop on over to MikeHagan, HAGAN.com. You'll read some information there about Elaine. And tonight you'll also hear the music of Void's Anatomy, a young woman from Canada named Marie Georges. And we started things off there with a song called In or Out. And we'll hear another from Marie and Void's Anatomy. Well, right about now, I guess. But what else before then? Let's see. Well, musicians. You know, as you know, I feature independent musicians on the program. You can find information about all of them on the website in the music archives. And for those of you out there who have music that you'd like to share and maybe have featured on the program, you know, I mention it all the time to send me this stuff, but but I guess I'm not very specific about it. What you basically need is 10 songs or so, from which I'll choose about 8 to play during the course of the program. So you need to have 10 songs, every one of which you're, you know, happy with and, you know, not embarrassed by, and that I'll be happy to play and that sort of thing. And if you have 10 songs, you know, send them to me. And if I like them, I'll feature you on the radio program. And I'd be glad to listen to anything that anybody has out there. You know, the range here is pretty wide open. And I like a lot of different stuff. And, of course, I have my favorites like everybody. And I'm sorry, that's just the way I am, right? You know, if you don't like it, well, it's just the way it goes, right? But I play as much good music, you know, as I can. And I try to come up with good stuff. And I'm more than happy to listen to the stuff that's being done out there, because there are tons and tons of creative people, or most of whom are not being heard by, you know, the great majority of people. And a lot of the stuff that we do get to hear is, you know, marginal at best. So, anyway, of course, it's my own opinion what I put on the air, but I'll do my best to play something that you like. And certainly some people will like it. And for the artist, they like it for sure. All right? So send it to me, and I'll check it out, and if we like it, we'll get it on the air, okay? All right, what else? Yeah, we'll do another one from Void's Anatomy here, then we'll come back, we'll do Space Weather, talk about upcoming guests. Probably no time for the news, because we're supposed to talk to Star and Michael Heisen, Star Newland and Dr. Michael Heisen in a bit. I'll run and check my email right now when I do this song here, but we'll see, all right? You never know with those two, but in a minute, I'll be back, and in the meantime, you're listening to Void's Anatomy on Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, and this is a song that is called Dots and Dirt.
So low, this sound.
All right, there's another one from Void's Anatomy. Hi, everybody. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And it's about 20 minutes or so after, well, about 25 now, 25 minutes after the hour or so of 11 p.m. on the 28th of May, 2007. Almost halfway through the year. Got June coming just around the corner. The solstice a few weeks away. And going to be a great summer, I have a feeling. All right? Okay, let's see. We've got Star and Michael that we're going to talk to in just a few minutes, but I'm going to have to get them on the phone here in about five. So let me say hi to everybody and take care of a little bit of business here real quick. If you're listening to us this evening, you're listening on KOPN, 89.5 FM, or you're listening over the Internet. We stream the show live from the radio station website, kopn.org, and we appreciate you listening wherever and however you may be doing it. Every Monday we do it, 11 p.m., right here from downtown Columbia, Missouri. We've been doing the show, well, streaming the show for about 3 or 4 months now, officially, but we also stream the show Monday nights via Cosmic Waves Radio Network, so I want to say thanks to all the guys and girls over there that make it happen. Either way, KOPN or Cosmic Waves Radio, thanks for listening every Monday night, and thanks to everybody who makes it happen. Live on the radio or on the net, okay? All right, what else we got going here? Like I say, music, send it, poetry, send it, artwork, I love it. We'll find more places for it up there on the website. And if you want to see what I'm talking about, just hop up there and go over to Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com. You'll see what I'm talking about. You'll have access to everything that we're doing. And, well, you can let me know what you think about it, okay? All right, the forum is busy as always. Always interesting topics being discussed over there. More than most of us can keep up with. Live chat, up and always active on Monday nights. We'll be peeking in there for questions and comments as we move through the program tonight. I encourage guests as well as listeners to join us in the chat room and in the forum. There's lots of great information and great personalities, too, that sort of move in and out of these different places. All right, my email address, orbitradio, O-R-B-I-T-R-A-D-I-O, orbitradio at AOL.com, if you want to get a hold of me directly through email. Send it to me, all right? Same with our guests and musicians. Send them email. They'd like to hear your thoughts. On the web at Mike Hagan, H-A-G-A-N.com. Phone number here in the studio. If we decide to take phone calls later with Elaine, 573-443-8255. You can write that down. Upcoming guest, as I mentioned tonight, Elaine Matthews, the author of The Heartbeat of Intelligence. Next week, Gary David, Orion and the Hopi. Neil Adams, the week after that. The 11th of June, that'll be. And he has a theory about the Earth growing. I love it. Patrick Flanagan, still trying to work things out with him this summer. Dr. Richard Tarnas, same thing with him. John Jenkins, probably sometime in June. I'm hoping that John will actually be here in Missouri and be out visiting during the solstice weekend out at my place. John Shelley will be here in town, I know that. And some other people, hopefully. But that should be a good time. And I'll tell you more about that in the weeks ahead. But anyway, Rick Miller, Richard Allen Miller back on the program sometime in the next month or two, and Michael and Star in just a few minutes. All right? A lot going on, as always, and we'll try to keep you up on everything that I, you know, see that comes into my sphere. All right? Okay, quick announcement. Timothy Leary, Dr. Timothy Leary, passed away on May 31st, 1996. He was born in 1920. 76 years old or so when he died. He was a psychologist, a philosopher, an explorer, a teacher, an optimist, as am I. I'm about as optimistic as you can be, I think, even though people really don't see me that way. I really am. It's just the things that I see are just completely different than most other people. But I'm very optimistic about what's happening on this planet. And I think everything is just rosy, actually. I think it's just the way it's supposed to be. Which doesn't mean there isn't a lot of horrible stuff going on, but there's been horrible stuff going on for a long, long time, and it's now coming to a close, in my opinion. At any rate, Timothy Leary, rightly called the Galileo of consciousness, he went public with his observations of the mind that he had made with psychedelic and hallucinogenic plants. You know, his original work was with the plants, long before LSD. And, of course, LSD is almost a plant, basically based identically on a plant chemistry. But at any rate, Tim Leary, He helped initiate a renaissance which is still only beginning to elaborate itself and show what it was really all about some 35, 40 years ago now. Anyway, Leary coined and popularized that catchphrase, turn on, tune in, drop out. But more importantly, for listeners of this program, in an interview in the late 1960s, Timothy Leary was asked, so what do you do after you turn on? And Tim answered, find the others. And that is something that stuck with me more than anything else he ever said. And that's what this program is about. That's what the web project is about, finding the others. And the others come in many different shapes and forms. So that's what we're doing here. We do it as well as we can. And I appreciate anybody else who likes to do it along with me, okay? So it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. And we've got a few others that we're going to find in Hawaii in just a few minutes. So let me get some music here for you. And see if we can't get Michael Heisen and Star Newland on the line with us from Hawaii, okay? All right, let's see here. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Back in just a few minutes, hopefully, with Michael Heisen, Star Newland from the Sirius Institute in Hawaii. We'll speak with them for about 10 or 15, 20 minutes maybe, and then we'll have Elaine Matthews, the author of The Heartbeat of Intelligence, at the top of the hour, okay? All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Back in just a few. This is Void's Anatomy with another wonderful piece of music. Everybody, hi there, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. We're going to jump in here and say hello really quickly to my good friend Star Newland. And
we're going
to, hello, Star, how are you?
Michael. I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm wonderful. And as always, we're sort of getting the technology together with her and her associate, Dr. Michael Heisen, who should be calling us any moment now. When he does, I'll bring him in on the line with us here, Star. But in the meantime, what's shaking in your world?
Well, lots as usual, lots of fun things and exciting and important things, too. Part of the purpose of our visit with you tonight on your show and with your audience, and aloha to everybody out there on Memorial Day today, is because, you know, the IWC, standing for the International Whaling Commission, is meeting right now in Anchorage, Alaska. And Michael and I were working our hearts out to make our way up there to have a press conference, to talk story about some things that are really important to us, and particularly with respect to our future together, humans and cetacea. So to that effect, we've created documents, proclamations that we would do at our press conference. So you, Mike, are hosting our press conference. Thank you.
All right. Well, I think we did just have the good doctor join us as well. Michael, are you there?
Yes.
Aloha. Right.
Michael, I just want to make sure you're nice and close to your telephone.
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, everybody, so we have it here. Dr. Michael Heisen and Star Newland, both from the Sirius Institute, talking to us from different locations in Hawaii. Michael, Star is just bringing us up to date on the IWC meeting. Star, or either one of you, please expand a little bit. Tell us about what's happening there.
Currently, they're deciding what kind of take they're going to allow for, like, scientific fishing, for example. Some of the other countries, like Norway and Iceland, are also getting on the bandwagon to restore whaling. Other cultures, including our American Inuits and others, are looking to be able to have enough harvest of whales for their indigenous gathering rights and things like this. And other indigenous people throughout the world have some kind of, like, entitlement. Interestingly, some of the Native Americans up in Alaska have just recently passed on their so-called, their quota to take some belugas because the numbers are so low. And we would really ask that all the other cultures take a look at that. The numbers are so low, leave them alone, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of what we're talking about, is why we have good reason to leave them alone. Michael has been crafting one document that he'd like to share with the audience about, you know, our relationship to each other and what today is about for us. And I have another document that I crafted. We've both been working across the island towards this conference with you today and your audience, Mike.
All right. Now, the International Whaling Commission is actually meeting right now? Is that going on right
now? They're meeting right now, right up in Alaska. There should be a link on Planet Puna for it, but I sure don't think so. But we'll get a link up after the show tonight so your audience can come.
Yeah, I'll do the same thing.
Yeah, planetpuna.com. And just, you know, for everybody to be aware that right now is a time when everybody's thoughts and everybody's prayers make a big difference.
Hmm.
And, you know, what we propose is that we have an ancient relationship with the cetacea, that they have been waiting for us for a long time to come back to that connection that we have with each other. And that being the case, and to envision what kind of world it could be when we're all, like, well, as many who want to, of course, but have some kind of connection with that kind of life, with what it's like to live like a pod kind of person, you know, with a sense of connectedness and a value and importance and, you know, giving birth in a good way and all the things that our work is about and our community outreach projects with the cetacea have included.
Hey, Michael.
So, yeah, yes. So Michael can talk.
how significant are these conferences, or is it just the same old every year?
It's, for the last few years, it's been on the wire. The Japanese have been lobbying and buying up boats from other countries like St. Kitts and places that never whaled before, and giving them development money and other things that would encourage them to vote with the Japanese in the IWC. And the Japanese think that our protection of the whales is something that's violating their culture, because they say they're just food and we want to be able to eat what we want to eat and that sort of thing. So for the last several years especially, they've been wanting to reinstate commercial whaling. And Iceland and Norway just started commercial whaling anyway, basically are doing what they want despite the IWC. And Japan has been threatening to do that as well. So it's right on the wire, and it has a lot to do with what we see as a global genocide on the cetacea.
Well, what can we do to help?
I don't know. Call the representatives. Write Japan.
Take a look at the website. Take a look at the links that we'll have up there so people can find places to interact. And then certainly get in touch with us through planetpuna@yahoo.com or through the Cetacean Commonwealth, actually, @yahoo.com. That's CETACEAN, Commonwealth. You know, more people are getting interested, aware, and informed, and making a difference that way.
You know, we've talked a lot on the air about the intelligence of the whales and the dolphins. And intelligence at a level, you know, big time intelligence that we're talking about here, consciousness and telepathy and all kinds of things. Where does that leave us? In other words, Michael, I know you're very interested in trying to establish, you know, communication and objective communication, this sort of thing. But, Star, you said, you know, this is a time when your prayers and your thoughts mean more than ever. Is this really happening, communication between the species on a human to whale or a human to dolphin level or whatever?
Yes.
Very much so, because
what are they telling us right now? In other words, they got to be very interested in all of our business here.
Get involved, be more playful, care about each other. Remember, we're all one. I mean, all the messages that we're about, that most of the dolphin people, pretty well all the dolphin people we've ever met, talk about. They're reaching people in their dreams, especially the pregnant ladies are dreaming about dolphins.
Mm.
Their babies are saying, get me to the water, Mom, let's play with the dolphins. You see, because the ETs, we know historically that the ET contacts that we have, the communication is through telepathy.
Mm.
That's consistently reported. I've studied that for years. It's all about the telepathy. Well, the cetacea are reaching us telepathically, too, and helping us to remember who we are and why we're here and our true relationship to each other. That's what we feel is going on, and inviting us to play with them again, you know, to reconnect with them again.
For the good of all of us.
Yeah.
For the good of all of us, especially. Especially.
And for some time I may have been hesitant to talk about the telepathy, but now, especially having talked extensively with Elizabeth Rauscher and found out what their results were with PK and remote viewing. And
yeah, Dr. Elizabeth Rauscher, by the way, for those who are unfamiliar with her,
Right. And she's been in that game for a long time.
Oh, yeah, amazing physicist, right.
They've got things established to probability values of 1 in 10 to the 20th. So it may be out of fashion or something to talk about it as a scientific reality. The measurements show otherwise. It is a reality.
Very interesting.
For many years.
Right.
So we can trust that people are actually having the telepathic experiences they say they are.
Yeah, and there's no reason to, or there's zero reason, I should say, to believe that, in other words, we can do this regardless of whether we're in the ocean or not.
Exactly. Wherever we are, we can communicate with all of life, first of all. The cetacea just remind us of this innate capacity. But the truth is, all of life is connected. All of life kind of knows that. But humans had this grand experiment of, you know, making like it was something other.
That's very funny, because my own intuition and experience of what's happening is that there are lots of different species that are sort of standing up and saying, hey.
Yes, what about us?
Yeah, I mean, the cetacea included, and some of them speak louder than others, for sure.
Uh-huh.
I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you're right that we can communicate with all of these different creatures. So.
Yeah, and they're just waiting for us, you know, with great patience and affection for us, you know, come back to the oneness of it all. And so, to that effect, you know, we're commemorating today the fallen ones of both species who've fallen to, you know, lies and, you know, bad thinking or, you know, separatist kind of thinking that it's okay to kill for whatever reasons. I mean, goodness, they've lived for millions of years in harmony with each other. We could learn a lot from them, and it's time for us to, especially if we want life to continue in a good way.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to have to cut it sort of short. I've got an interview that I have to start in about 10 minutes or so, and I still have to get her on the line. But, Michael, is there anything you'd like to finish up with
Star could read her document, and maybe I'd have time to read mine?
Well, Michael, you're supposed to read yours first, remember?
Oh, all right.
Please do.
Michael has his first to read, and then I'll read mine, okay?
All right, great.
This will be up on Planet Puna pretty quickly. A proclamation of the Cetacean Commonwealth addresses the Earth and her people, calling moratorium on Memorial Day. Long have the cetacea swum in the seas and helped and aided humans. For at least 18,000 years, humans have hunted them. Throughout this history, as with all hunting cultures, the prey was honored, as in Japan, where coastal villages had temples dedicated to the whales. We honor all the whaling peoples and forgive humanity's collective lack of awareness that is now ended. In this UN Year of the dolphins are currently losing millions per year to pollution, fishing, drive fisheries, nets, high-intensity sonar, geological mapping, and other hazards. The great whales are at 1% of their former numbers, and some are still hunted. In the West, the bodies of the whales fed and clothed us, and their oil lit the lamps of many cities. Yet the whales were still honored. Whale oil anointed the kings and the popes, who still wear the stylized whale head symbolic of the ancient water god Oannes or Dagon. On Memorial Day 2007, we honor all our dead, human and cetacea. We call for a full moratorium on whaling of all kinds. We also call for a new beginning based on new understanding and appreciation of who the cetacea are to humans. Many indigenous cultures, including Hawaiians, Maori of New Zealand, the Zulu, Tibetan, Eskimo, the West Coast natives of North America, and the Mirning people of Australia all say whales are their ancestors. This is now supported by findings showing the dolphin genome is contained in the human genome, and the cetacea and hominids, that's our primate group, share nerve cells called spindle cells. The various findings that humans are semi-aquatic adds more support. The whales are our ancestors. We are related. Early people along the Nile, Yangtze, Indus, and Ganges rivers likely interacted with the freshwater dolphins in those rivers, as they do today in the Amazon basin. This interaction contributed to the development of our civilizations. Indeed, China, Greece, Babylon, and Sumer attribute the founding of their civilizations to aquatic beings like Oannes. There was a partnership with the dolphins, especially in ancient Greece, where they fished together with the Greek fishermen, even sharing their sacramental kaikian with the dolphins. There are stories of dolphins guiding the ships, rescuing people, and befriending children. The Greeks felt the dolphin was the most divine form of creation, and killing a dolphin was equivalent to murder. Excuse me. We term this partnership with the cetacea and knowledge of their nature as the Delphic tradition. This is typified by the ancient Greeks with their Philadelphia, or Philos Delphia, which means love of dolphins. Western cultures largely forgot the Delphic tradition for the last 2,000 years. It was maintained by indigenous people. With modern research into genetics, communication, therapy, and underwater birth with the cetacea comes fuller recognition of our deep mutual connections. We are reaching an understanding that confirms the ancient knowledge. Cetaceans are self-aware, sentient, have brains comparable to or up to 7 times larger than humans. This implies the cetacea have comparable or superior intelligence, making them the most intelligent beings on Earth. They've been shown to have complex language, cultural transmission, tool use, and other cultural traits. During our extended aquatic human evolution, beneficial partnerships with freshwater and ocean dolphins arose, with the cetacea a harmonizing and civilizing influence. Now that we have rediscovered this, we can honor our cetacean ancestors and recreate our partnerships through joint cetacean-human projects involving communication, birthing, therapy, and other areas. We can soon communicate with beings who have lived in harmonious societies for millennia, bringing new perspectives, knowledge, and technology to landlocked humans. This is part of the Delphic tradition brought forward. It's time to give recognition to the cetacea as intelligent, sentient beings and include them under human laws. We are now on the verge of spacefaring. It's time we restore proper relations with the extraterrestrials of our own oceans, the peoples of the sea, our ancestors, and go on together in loving respect and harmony.
Thank you, Michael. And Star, do you have something for us as well?
Oh, yes. This is in memoriam and celebration of Cetacea, Puna, Hawaii, May 28, 2007. We bring greetings and aloha, celebrating and declaring our agreement to seek out harmonious relations one to another, including human, cetacea, and extraterrestrials. The Cetacean Commonwealth realizes this on behalf of the United Nations 2007 International Year of the Dolphin. In order to restore harmonious relations among humans, first, we must restore harmonious relations with our ancient ones, the people of the sea, our ancestors. We are here to remind you of a time soon to come when we will have reestablished right relations with each other, when prophecy long told among our people speaks of when we will have rejoined to bring forward the Delphic tradition and involve the many who would join with us to promote common ideals of aloha, unity with life, life-affirming actions, and so on. Henceforth, let it be known that we, the undersigned, resolve to live in harmony with each other and are calling the moratorium on this Memorial Day, May 28, 2007, as we honor the lives and memory of the many of both our kind, cetacea and human, who have passed on in war and otherwise. We agree to seek the well-being and ancient relationship between each species restored, thus bringing harmony to our world. Signatories to participate as a member of each species commit to make a difference by their thoughts and actions.
Well, so, all right, there you have it.
Yes. So we're also invited to call something that we're calling the forum. We're gathering the people over the next several months, different organizations, different governmental bodies, including the navies, to come to the table, to come to a forum that the Commonwealth is putting together to bring together people who truly have the cetacea's best interests at heart and the well-being of the planet, too, and see what we can do to make conditions better for them, to help preserve their wellness and their well-being and their lives. And so this is the beginning of the forum. Anyone out there who wants to participate and wants to get involved can get in touch with us through the Cetacean Commonwealth at yahoo.com or through you or through Planet Puna.
All right. All right. Yeah, that's wonderful. Michael, thank you so much. I'm sorry we're going to have to cut it here, you guys.
Thanks for having us on.
Yes,
thank you so very much, Michael.
Yes, of course.
Thank you to the audience for being part of this historic time.
Well, I'm pleased to be a part of it, and we'll get back on the air and do a full program sometime in the next couple months this summer, okay?
Thank you very much. Aloha.
Thank you so much, everybody. That's Dr. Michael Heisen and Star Newland doing wonderful work for the Cetacean Commonwealth and there in Hawaii at the Sirius Institute. You can find them on the web at www.planetpuna.com. And you can link there from my site from here to eternity. They've been on the program for number of years now, many times, and I love the work that they're doing. They're both wonderful people doing great stuff. So, all right, it's Mike Hagan. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We're going to switch gears here, put a piece of music on from Void's Anatomy. This is a wonderful song that's called Taming Mystery. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Elaine Matthews, okay? Stick around, 89.5 FM, on the web at kopn.org.
listening to Radio Orbit with Mike Hagan on KOPN 89.5 FM.
That's right, you are listening to Radio Orbit, and my name is Mike Hagan. Just a few minutes after midnight now, on the 29th of May, 2007, and I'd like to welcome my guest for the evening. Her name is Elaine Matthews. She's a wonderful woman who's got a book that I'm holding in my hand here that I had the pleasure of reading over the last month or so. It's called The Heartbeat of Intelligence, and I don't know that much about Elaine, quite frankly. But I know that I like her a lot, and we're going to find out a lot more about her in the next couple hours. She's with us from her home on the West Coast, and we will say hello and welcome to Elaine Matthews. Hi, Elaine.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
I was listening earlier to your guest, and it's just a perfect introduction to the subject we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Dr. Heisen and Starr's work, but they've been on the program a number of times before, but I'm so interested in the dolphins and the whales, and the more I learn about them, the more I learn sort of about us.
Exactly.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's learn a little bit about you first, okay, before we get too deeply into the stuff that we're going to be talking about with regard to your research and the stuff that you write about. Let's talk a little bit about you. My audience, I'm sure, isn't real familiar, perhaps, with your background, and neither am I. I'd love to hear a little bit about your own story. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you got where you are.
Well, actually, my story is the reason that I wrote the book. My lifestyle fell right into the subject of the book. I was raised in a family of the youngest of five daughters, and while our mother was a very dutiful mother, very wonderful mother in every way except that she didn't love us. She didn't have any love for us. It was just duty.
Mm.
And we grew up because of this with great holes, you might say, in our emotional development.
Mm.
And when that happens with youngsters and they grow up into adulthood, they cannot think properly. They cannot make decisions properly. Everything is a searching to fill in those holes. And that was the story of my life. And I was living my life in a kind of like a malfunctioning R2-D2, you know, getting along okay, but making tremendous mistakes and mistakes that made me very unhappy. At some point, I began to realize that there was something wrong. Until you realize something's wrong, you don't know something's wrong.
Right, right, right. The whole ignorance is bliss idea.
And
further, yeah.
It may be bliss, but it doesn't lead to bliss. It's a terrible ignorance. But for some reason or other, I was fortunate enough to come into this life, and I do believe in other lifetimes, and this seemed to be a lifetime in which I was cut out to look for truth, and maybe that was the way I was encouraged to look for truth, was through the pain and suffering. And so I became, through the years, very, very interested in a lot of esoteric subjects. I was hardly ever interested in mainstream subjects. I liked truth in science, truth in the arts, but also truth in spiritual things.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that began to shape my approach to life, pushing me further and further and further in the direction of truth, with a capital T. And at some point, I began to realize something was wrong. Something was wrong with me, with my life, my approach.
At what point in your life?
That was about middle age, and I'm a little older than that now. And it started me on the path of I encountered a very wonderful spiritual teacher. That helped a lot. But I began to straighten myself out by just simply understanding a lot of things, applying them to myself, and having the smarts to do it. And which, unfortunately, a lot of people I can see do not have that. I don't know why, but they don't. Now, part of that has to do with how much heart intelligence you have. Now, when you come in deprived of love, the newborn comes in with a certain amount of neuronal pathways to the brain to make the heart intelligence connection. It has to survive and live as an organism. But it depends entirely upon how much love from the mother the infant has at birth, even before birth, at birth and growing up, as to how much heart intelligence and how much intelligence, period, is developed in the organism. And without that intelligence, you cannot make wise decisions. You cannot lead a normal life. Now, one of the things that struck me, I'll break away just a minute here, one of the things that struck me listening to your guests just now was that nature, in my opinion, and from my research, nature intended every human being to be able to have full heart intelligence. That is, a full connection between the left brain, the right brain, and the heart. Mm. To be able to grow into wisdom, to make wise decisions, to be able to live in the world wisely, and to live in the world in connection with all other life forms wisely and well and lovingly. And I thought to myself, we have almost, if we had enough heart connection, heart intelligence in this country, we would have absolutely no need for societies to protect the whales, societies to protect the animals, for societies to protect children. Why would we? Because we would love them. We would not be harming them.
Mm-hmm.
We would not be eating them. We would not be using for our lifestyles, for whatever reason, for research or any reason. That's the heart intelligence that nature had established for us, the right to have. And every single human being should have that. But if you're not given the love as an infant coming into the world that you need to establish that, then you're deprived of that. Now, as you grow up, you're not only making a lot of mistakes, not making wise judgments, but you're cutting off a part of your own nature. And when you, and there are a lot of people who grow up without that love. They're not beaten, they're not abused, but they grow up without the proper amount of love and the proper amount of wisdom on the part of their parents. And in our world today, what that usually winds up meaning is that they are very, very left brain, no heart intelligence. And we see that around us all the time. We see that from the top, especially in the top, the people that are so-called governing us. They're very, very lacking in heart intelligence.
Yeah, I always imagine, man, what must have been like growing up as Dick Cheney as a child? I mean, imagine what that guy must have been through.
I can't imagine. To me, he may have had parents who did everything the right way, materially. And they sent him to college. They did all the right things, and they set things up for him. They had all the right contacts, and they got him into this position or that position for advancement. For what?
Right.
Advancement to what?
Hmm.
Advancement to, insanity?
Hmm. Well, let's talk about the word intelligence then, first of all. What does it mean? I'm sure there would be different definitions given by lots of different people, depending on if you asked them and gave them 30 seconds. What's intelligence to you?
Intelligence is being able to act let me put it this way. Intelligence should be the ability to think in such a way as to everything should be right in your life, that fall into place in your life to take care of yourself intelligently, but to take care of others in your life intelligently, to take care of your surroundings, your environment, your planet intelligently, lovingly, caringly, without destroying, without hurting, without harming. And that to me is intelligent. If you are going to harm another person, if you're going to act on another person's act out something against another person, to harm another person, that's not intelligent.
Yeah, and when you expand it, I guess, on a cultural scale and then a national scale and then a global scale, you have
absolutely, absolutely. I don't think that we have very much hard intelligence in our world today at all. I think the main reason is because we do not have our hearts connected to our, well, it goes through the limbic system and then to the right brain. And then the left brain depends upon the right brain for some wisdom, for some insight. And we shut off our right brain in this society from the, especially the leaders at the top. They're totally left brain. They don't seem to understand that you have to consult with the heart and the right brain. You have to allow for that side of your nature.
Mm.
The right brain attributes are all nurturing, loving, caring, compassion. They're creative abilities from the right brain. The arts, the painting, writing, dance and song, everything spontaneous, imagination and inventiveness, new ideas, sense of humor, all of these are right brain.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, we have this image in the West of the starving artist, and it's actually true.
It is true.
Because it's so difficult to pursue a career in the arts, the true arts, you know what I mean?
That's right.
In this sort of a culture, because as you mentioned, there's very, very little value given to it, even though there's a lot of talk about the arts, you know.
Oh, well, yes, but the artists are the ones who should be supported first.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, everybody would be seen to be artists.
Right.
If they had the heart and the brain connected. Because then your right brain would be fully developed. Everybody's right brain would be fully developed. So everybody would be in some way an artist. In some way they would be exhibiting. Everybody would be exhibiting some form of creativity.
Mm-hmm. I think in a way everybody sort of does. It's just a matter of how it plays out. In other words, the Dick Cheney artwork might not be very pleasant artwork. You know, I mean, it can be dangerous and destructive artwork, but I mean it's still an outplaying of the imagination. It's just the imagination without, as you mentioned earlier, without the wisdom to make appropriate decisions, maybe.
Exactly, because nature intended that the left brain, which is a very, very essential part of our makeup to have, we're not going to go through an evolutionary gate without the left brain.
Mm-hmm.
But the left brain, and the left brain is the decision maker, ultimately. But nature intended the left brain to have the input from the right brain of the wisdom.
Hmm.
Without the right brain, and the right brain receives its wisdom from the heart. The heart receives its wisdom from a greater, it's very strange, a lot of people don't realize that the heart and the frontal lobes are the two places in the body where that are in connection with a higher dimension, actually. They're spatial.
Hmm.
Part of their existence is outside of the physical body. And they, especially the heart first, receives these higher impulses of love, higher love, spiritual love, which is passed on to the limbic system, which passes it on to the right brain. And the right brain being spatial, it's outside of time. There is no, it doesn't have to think about anything. It just is, and it can make instant decisions, and they're always right.
Hmm.
And that is the wisdom that the left brain needs to rely on. The left brain has the choice, and it has the right to make decisions. But it was intended by nature that it would listen to the wisdom of the right brain. And in our society, and unfortunately too much in the world, we have over generations and generations and generations cut off the right brain in favor of the left brain. And we have denied that wisdom to the right brain, I mean to the left brain. And so the decisions are based on faulty reasoning. They're based on no heart, no compassion, no reasoning. And you can see that in the decisions of our leaders, the decisions to go to war, the decisions to treat people a certain way, the decisions to take away liberties, the decisions to own people, to master the world. That has nothing to do with real intelligence.
Mm. Including the way that other species are treated in the earth itself.
Including. That's why I say if we had real heart intelligence on this planet as a species, we exhibited heart intelligence, we would have no need to protect the animals.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have no need for organizations to protect the animals. It just wouldn't come up. It wouldn't happen. The cruelty wouldn't be there.
What do you say to the people that say, well, look, we have to eat. We got to eat something.
Well, do we? I happen to be vegetarian. Do we have to eat meat?
Well, I mean, I think that the plant. I mean, I could argue that the plant is alive, and that the plants are intelligent too. Yes. I've had experiences with plants that are as profound as I've had with a dolphin. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But I'm not trying to pick a fight about it. But I think that. But that is a question that comes up, and usually the answer that I've heard that suits me best is that, well, yes, everything is alive, but there's a difference. It has to do with the mindset about the way you eat and the respect for where it comes from and that sort of thing.
That's right.
I mean, our Native ancestors, and I have a Native American ancestry in my own background, and although I'm not a hunter and I'm not a big carnivore or anything like that, but I do recognize that they had a relationship with the animals in which, in many cases, the animal was a partner in the sacrifice. In other words, the animal willingly gave its life for the man or the woman.
Yes.
But there was a relationship between that was deep, sacred, and spiritual relationship, which could not be further from the factory farm type of setups that we have, that I think you're referring to. And I mean this absolute
exactly
disrespect
right.
and just absolute horrible situation for all these animals. Yes.
No, I agree with you because I have a lot of respect for the Native American way of, and I have no quarrel with that whatsoever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If the world fell apart and I had to go out into the wild and live, I would probably become a hunter again.
Yeah.
I have no quarrel with that. As you say, it's how it's done.
Yeah, yeah.
And when it's done well and done right and done in a religious or a spiritual, let's say, spiritual
mm-hmm.
manner, from the stories that I've read, that often the animals presented themselves.
Yeah, it's amazing some of the stories that have been told.
Right, exactly. But we are as disrespectful of plant life as we are of the,
yes,
the animal life too. So the same thing could be said about the plant life.
I agree. Yeah, and we tend to. I'm a huge plant person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge plant person. I love the plants and I love animals too. But I always think the plants get sort of a bad rap because they can't run and they don't have thumbs. You know, so the people sort of look down at them a little bit. So I'm always like saying, hey, what about the plants?
Oh, no, they're highly evolved. They're highly developed.
They really are. Okay, well let's talk a little bit about our own development. You're mentioning a direct connection between the heart and the human heart we're talking about here, the physiological organ, the human heart, and the human brain.
That's right.
Could you talk a little bit about that? And I think that's probably news to a lot of people.
Well, the direct connection between the human heart and the human brain was something that nature, that is our gift from nature in our evolutionary path. And it is the exactly the way that the direct relationship between the heart and the brain is our direct path to evolution, and the evolution that we have ahead of us, that we have, I believe, coming up, and it's coming up very quickly, our next step in evolution. We're not going to make it without that full heart connection. That's what the full heart brain connection is about. Now, there is a word that a lot of people don't know about or hardly ever heard of, and that's neoteny.
Neoteny, yeah, you write about that a little bit.
Yes, and that's N-E-O-T-E-N-Y,
mm-hmm.
Neoteny, and that's the theory of the retention, to put it in a left brain way, the retention into adulthood of childhood characteristics as an evolutionary plus. Now, if you go back and you look at, there's a roundabout way to get there, but you'll understand it when I get through. If you look at some of the anthropological findings about the early hominids, in the Australopithecus, the Homo erectus, and Neanderthal species, anthropologists found that the children, the little ones, the babies of these species, all had the perfect characteristics of the human, modern human head. In other words, their babies matched our modern human adult heads today.
Amazing.
Yes. And so the evolutionary push was obviously towards a more childlike being, childlike body, as an evolutionary plus, but not just the body. In other words, if you look at the human face retains childlike characteristics, the baby characteristics, even the men do, compared to the other apes and animals. We do not have the elongated jaw, or the muzzle of adulthood. That's one characteristic. Another difference is that among our nearest ancestor or nearest relatives, they stopped learning at about 3 years of age. The ones that have any imagination, intelligence, that stopped at about 3 years of age. Up to that time, they have a very close relationship to our intelligence, child intelligence. Now, that tells you another thing, that when in the human being, we retain all those childlike characteristics, the play, the imagination, the intelligence, the joy, learning, most of all learning. Our nearest relative, the ape, cannot learn after about the age of three. It just goes again on instinct. But we continue learning, and we learn, if we want to, we can learn till the day we die.
Right.
As an older person.
Sure. I think it's the only way to live,
It's the only way to live. It's the only way for us to live.
Right, it sure seems that way.
This was nature's intention, evolutionary intention. And the way that this is, one of the reasons that this is possible is because there is this great connection that was intended by nature between the heart, the limbic system, the right brain, and the left brain. The heart feeds information of love and caring and all of the, what we consider the feminine characteristics of nurturing. It feeds them to the limbic system. The limbic system feeds it to the right brain, and the right brain is supposed to feed them to the left brain. If the left brain shuts off the right brain, then it has nowhere to go, and the organism does not learn those qualities. Now, the interesting thing is that if you study the, what I would call hardcore criminals, and it has been done.
Hello, Elaine?
Yeah, hello.
Hello.
I have no say when it starts falling again, light burning your eyes, blinding us on its way, and falling again. say when the sun comes up again, light climbing up walls, wrapping us on its way and shining again.
What light means to
reach
me?
Hello, everybody. It's Mike Hagen. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. Sorry about the little technical glitch we had there. In fact, we're still having some trouble with the transmitter, but we do have the live stream that's up and working just fine, so we are going to just move right along. It was about time to take a break there anyway, so we had sort of an extended one. But we heard a piece of music there from Void's Anatomy, another great song there called Merging Twilights. And this woman's name is Marie Georges, and she's a Canadian, French-Canadian young lady, making great music. Everything you're hearing tonight is from a CD that is called Shades of a Vast Moment. And you can find information about Marie and her music on the web at Voids Anatomy, V-O-I-D-S, anatomy.com. And she's got the MySpace thing as well, of course, as everybody does these days. So, at any rate, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We'll get right back to Elaine Matthews and say an apology, first of all, and thanks for sticking around and being patient, Elaine.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm lucky you're on the West Coast, at least. Sometimes I have, these things happen, and I've got people on the line from the East Coast, and it's going on 3 in the morning there or whatever, and they're just like, oh, my gosh. Anyway, well, let's see if we can get back on track. We were talking before the goddess jumped in and cut us off, and we were talking about this connection between the heart and the brain, a physiological connection, an actual
yes.
physical connection.
Right.
Maybe you could continue a little bit along those lines.
Well, that's is such an important connection, because that is nature's evolutionary intention for humanity. That is the way that nature intended for all the human species to develop and evolve. And as I started to mention, I think that we are on the verge now, I think that we've already started, in my estimation, into a new phase of evolution.
Do you think this is happening with children first?
Yes.
Or do you think it can happen to an adult?
Well, actually, it can happen to anybody at any time. I'd like to tell people that if they think they do not have a heart connection, if they think that they have any of the problems that I mentioned before that I went through,
and so many people probably do. In other words, the story that you told about your young, the early part of your life, your childhood.
Right.
I mean, this is the common story.
A common story, and that's why. When you look at around, we do not have a society of heart intelligence.
But
we
can acquire it.
We can acquire it, and that's what I learned. I had this wonderful experience when I began to open to this. I was reading Joseph Chilton's book on heart intelligence.
The Biology of Transcendence.
This was an earlier one.
Oh, Evolution Zen, probably.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was the one where he was spelling it out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that I suddenly realized in the middle of that book that he was talking about me.
I sort of had the same thing happen when I read it. I love Joe Pierce. He's wonderful.
Oh, isn't he? He's just great. And I broke down and I cried because I realized that he was describing me.
Mm.
And I asked myself, you know, is it possible? Is it possible for an adult? This was in after middle age. I was really up in age, and I said, is it possible for a person later in life to make that connection?
Right.
And I didn't get the answer right away. And this was the first of a series of synchronicities which began to show me that I was on the right path. But that night, anyway, when I was entering into my meditation, I had a brand new tape that I hadn't heard before of sacred music.
So you were obviously on a track, though. You were searching for something anyway. In other words, the fact that you had a book by Joseph Chilton Pierce in your hand says something.
Oh, I was searching for years and years and years. That was my search for truth in anywhere I could find it. But it was always, it's interesting because my heart has always been my truth machine. And whenever my heart responded to something, then I knew I was looking at, listening to, hearing about truth, and I might not have the full answer there, but, you know, bring it in.
Mm.
And so I knew that I was onto something for many reasons. Probably isn't time tonight, but even when I heard Terrence McKenna the first time, I'm going, whoa, this is truth, this is truth. You know? He's so wonderful.
Oh, yeah, he was something else.
But anyway, that night, when I started meditation and I started playing this sacred music, all of a sudden, I felt the music stop going through my head and my ears, and it moved in down to my heart and started coming in through my heart. I could feel it literally coming in through my heart, and my whole body started to vibrate. And this lasted and it was just ecstatic. And this lasted about 2 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And as it faded, the answer downloaded into my mind absolutely. The heart intelligence can be connected at any time in your life.
Mm.
And the main way that you do it is through meditation.
Mm.
Because you can be quiet, the heart is listening, the heart is calling to you. In meditation, the heart is calling to you. You're calling to the heart. And it's a circuit. And it begins the connection between the heart and the brain. It actually literally begins to create neurons. Every time you meditate, no matter what your method of meditation, doesn't matter, you begin to connect, literally connect new neurons to your brain.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is. And that's what started me on the path to healing and through developing my heart intelligence.
So the heart sort of is broadcasting this signal all the time, and it's just waiting for an answer. It's just waiting for the recognition, waiting for the connection to be made. But the will or the intention has to be there, or
the free will and the intention has to be there. But the heart, even since writing the book, I have become more and more convinced that the heart is the organ of transformation.
Mm.
The heart is the organ of evolution. The heart was a gift to us from the goddess, from nature, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
to bring us to her, to enhance our evolution, complete our evolution.
Well, we have so many cultural conditioning influences that are working against us. In other words, we're taught for the most part that the heart is a pump.
That's right.
I mean, it's a pump, right?
Right.
What are you talking about, lady? The
yeah.
heart is a pump. It's nothing else. And get over your new age self, basically.
Yeah.
Well. Right.
Right. That's about it, too. That's about the attitude.
But now we actually have physical, scientific evidence that shows that this is not the case, that the heart actually does have neurons, and it does a significant number of neurons, and it does have these physical connections that actually traverse the body and go up to the brain.
It carries all the messages of love and caring and intelligence,
mm.
wisdom, from a higher source, Mike, that comes through the heart.
Mm.
That's why the heart is has part of its connection, obviously has part of its existence in a higher realm.
Mm-hmm.
And it winds up directly, this passage of intelligence or messages from the heart to the brain eventually finds its way to the frontal lobes. The frontal lobes are the seat of, among many other things,
mm-hmm.
the frontal lobes are the seat of socialization.
And this is the most advanced part of the human brain, at least
that's
with that,
right.
Right? Okay.
That's right.
Right.
And if you do not have the heart connection, if you do not have the love that you need from the mother, then you do not have full frontal lobe development. And when you do not have that, you have, when you rely only on the left brain, and you're a left brain oriented person,
mm-hmm.
you may have been raised in a very nice way. But without that heart intelligence, then you are love deprived, heart deprived, intelligence deprived, and everything it comes out of the right. The left brain, and the wisdom is missing. There's just no wisdom there, and everything is about me, me first, myself second. If there's anything left, I'll take it.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And your talk that I heard on the open mic about the heart was wonderful.
Mm.
It was wonderful because right on. And to me, this is nature's gift to the human beings. But we are the gift to nature because this is the way that the goddess is evolving on this planet is through the human body. And eventually, I'm not saying we're going to abandon the planet, and that it's not we're not going to live on it anymore. But I'm saying that we will. Some of us will be going to the stars,
mm.
but we will be going to the stars. We're not going to the stars unless we have full heart intelligence.
No, I mean I'm not sure we'd be allowed to.
We wouldn't. We absolutely would not be allowed to do it.
Mm.
We're not ready for it, and I think that there's a guard on there.
In some way, I have to. I imagine you're correct about that. I don't know what it is, but something like that is going on, I think.
I don't know what it is either, and I'm not really concerned. I'm just standing back and watching.
Hey, let me ask you a question about something that just came up, actually, that I got an email, and I've sort of been thinking about it anyway. You mentioned the concept of neoteny.
Yes.
A little bit earlier, before we were so rudely interrupted.
Yeah.
A person makes a note about culture and things, in other words, the negative aspects of culture, television, propaganda, this sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
that those could be seen as a neotenizing influence as well. In other words, the other side of the neoteny coin is that if you live in a culture that encourages you to remain adolescent, you don't grow up. And I think about things like bread and circuses, and the fact that as long as the football game's on and the
mm-hmm.
TV guide is there, and there's
yes.
a little money in the back pocket, there are for the great majority of men, at least in our country, it sort of reminds me of neoteny because they are retaining the characteristics of sort of young men, you know, boys, but not really being men.
I think that is an excellent point. I think that whoever said that or was asking that is right on. However, and that is very, very true. That is exactly what's happening. But it's a dead end. It's not an evolutionary plus. In other words, it's misusing.
So neoteny has that caveat that it's supposed to be something that moves your evolutionary strategy forward.
Absolutely. And if it does not, then, and that's why the majority of people who do not enjoy hard intelligence are simply not that it can't be changed, but at the moment they're like swimming in the shallow end of the gene pool.
Well, let me ask you a question again about children then. There's this there are a number of physiological requirements, like you mentioned. In other words, love is one thing, but there are also certain things that have to happen on a physical level for children to develop correctly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, as we mentioned, a great many children who are now either still children or young people or adults or whatever, like you say, we've had generations of this now. For the people who have missed the windows and they weren't able to make the connections when they were supposed to, you mentioned that it is possible. And I think it's important that we talk a little bit more about that, because the great majority of people are probably in that situation. They think, okay, well, great. You know, I was deprived of this, that, and the other thing, and now I'm where I am.
Right.
But you know, I have a desire, of course, like you mentioned, you got to have that intention. You got to want to actually be something different. But then you can do it, apparently.
Yes, you can. You have to stop the blame game. And you have to move to the desire for it, to understand that, that it's necessary, number one. Number two, it can be had. You can get it back. You can attain it. And it isn't just meditation is one of the greatest ways to do it, but this is an adult thing. Most children, you know, they don't meditate. But all of the things that are missing in a child that seem not to have connected with love, they are, because they are usually handled by or dispensed by an adult. And the adult, if the adult is caring and understanding of all the connections, all of the systems in the body. Now, for instance, from birth, even the mother may be very loving, but if she is involved in the mainstream medical professional way of birthing children, they're going to lose some of that right there.
Right.
Because every single step of the birthing process is essential for all the systems to come online for the child through the heart and the brain. And if any step is missed, then there is some flaw there as the child grows in their makeup. But all of that can be corrected. So they can once the caretaker, the caregiver, the loving person.
Right, when they discover it in themselves.
When they discover it in themselves and they see what it means and they educate themselves to what is necessary in the child, and they begin to take the child out of the mainstream idea of what's right about childhood and what's right for this and the vaccinations and all that crap, you know. And it's done lovingly and for the right reason, not in anger.
Right. That's amazing because, you know, I'm a father of a 3.5-year-old boy and a 8-month-old boy.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah, and they're you know, just the joy of my life, and and everything that I do, I basically do for them, you know.
Right.
Including all the radio and all this stuff. I mean, really, it's just all... I decided after I had kids, or when I had my first son, it's actually funny, because I've heard my friends and, you know, I don't know, lots of people, I think, they say, oh my gosh, we have a child now. Now my life is over, you know. And, you know, and now I have to just... do whatever it takes to just take care of the child or whatever. And I sort of went the other way. I sort of went, well, I have a child now. Now I have to do something extraordinary.
Yes. Oh, Mike, you're so right.
You know, I mean, now I have a reason to. So everything I do, I try to show my children that, look, you can do anything. And the way that you do anything is by having models that have shown you that they can do anything.
Absolutely.
Think, so.
Absolutely.
Well, I think it's amazing because both of my children were born through cesarean section as well.
I
wasn't very pleased about it, don't get me wrong.
No, I know. You would be very displeased about it.
Recognizing some of the things that you're already talking about, I think that it is a hopeful situation for people that you can as an individual and your children can recover. And I mean, children are so amazingly resilient. They can recover from anything as long as you give them just a little bit of love and security and everything that they need. Man, they can come back from anything.
From anything, Mike.
Yeah.
They really can. And that's another one of nature's gifts.
Isn't it amazing?
That's one of the gifts of the goddess for her children, is that they are resilient. And if the parent can understand, or the caretaker can understand all of these things and what it means, and raise them accordingly, and no matter what the child has been through, the child is probably more resilient than the adult.
Absolutely, yeah.
And all the systems that might have been missed by having the children born by cesarean, If the parent, in your case yourself, which you are intelligent enough to know that might have missed some steps, that can be overcome just by your love, your dedication, your understanding, your environment that they're raised in. This is what nature is asking of us for our children.
Yeah, and at this point it's becoming sort of an imperative.
Absolutely,
I mean,
imperative.
We're obviously, for anybody paying attention, there are a number of situations that are unsustainable, and we are in a perilous situation on the planet in general.
We are, and this is why I say that my own feeling is that we're approaching we have already come to a crisis point. I think you said earlier this evening, you know, we've had it. It's done.
Yeah, and in my own sense, I say this all the time, but I'm as optimistic as you can be. I just think that we're in the middle of the end of the former, and we're sort of in that in between period.
You got it. That's exactly right.
You want to hear something really funny? I was talking to John Sheliak. I don't know if you know who John Sheliak is. He's been on the program before.
Yes.
But he's a nuclear physicist. He worked for Los Alamos in this whole business. But he was also a buddy of Terrence's.
Yes.
And did a whole lot of really interesting and important work on the time wave theory and stuff. Anyway, we were talking yesterday, actually, just talking as friends, and he used the metaphor. He said, well, yeah, he said, it's like, if you imagine the dinosaurs at the end of the age, you know, and the little furry mammals running around, he said, the first order of business is just to make sure you're out of the way as they're falling. You know, and I think that's sort of where we are now. It doesn't mean that things aren't really ugly and that there isn't still some nastiness that's happening and that may be ahead of us, but I do believe that that's sort of the situation, that the dinosaurs are falling, and it's our business right now to make sure we stay out of the way as best we can before this new thing starts out. So
get ready to mop it up.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree. I myself personally, I went through a long period of being angry about the way things were until I began to understand how they work and what's going on in the heart, intelligence, and nature and all of that. And I have finally arrived at the point where I find that we are living through one of the most tremendously joyful times.
Boy.
Because we're on our way. And we're on our way to a new human being. And we're part of it.
I think so. I think you're right, and you're not alone. There are many, many people that are saying something like this, and there's obviously a general sense in the psyche, the overmind of the species,
right,
or something, that something,
right,
is going on, because even the average Joe on the street, most people that you approach, I mean, if they've got a pulse, they say, well, something's going on, I don't know what, but
uh-huh,
you know,
exactly. You can sense it, and I feel myself that I just feel so privileged to be alive and experiencing this at this time in our history, in our evolution, that I should be here and be part of it and be aware of it.
Yeah.
It's the awareness that is such a joy.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Because if you're not aware, God.
Then it becomes what it is for so many people. This is sort of a miserable existence or something, that what am I doing here, and why am I here, and when will it end?
And it's so sad, because
it really is.
That could be changed. In a lot of cases it won't be. They're not ready to. But that, to me, the criteria for the evolution of humanity is the heart intelligence. And if you do not have at least a start on it, you're not going to go through that gate.
Yeah, all right. Well, look, top of the hour here. Let's take a little break, okay?
Okay.
All right, everybody. Elaine, I haven't mentioned it. I've been sort of sketchy because of the technical situation, but your book is available. I know it's available at Amazon.
Yes.
And I don't think that you actually have an official website. Maybe you do, and I'm not aware of it. If you do, please let us know.
I've kind of fought things on that. At the moment, I do not. I think I'm going to have to, because I also do artwork, and my son is in the process now of starting to market and you know, that sort of thing.
Great.
The art thing, and I'm going to be forced into it. For now, I know we usually don't give out email addresses, but I'll give mine out if anybody wants to contact.
Actually, you don't have to. I've got a link up at the on my website that goes over to Amazon, and also there's another website that has some information about your book. Both of those are up, and unless you really want to, you don't have to, because people can obviously come through me, and I'd be glad to forward any messages or whatever.
Okay, that would be fine. That's what I was concerned about, if anybody wanted to ask any questions or anything like that. Yes, they can find the book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, either one.
All right, and the book is called The Heartbeat of Intelligence. The author is with me tonight. Her name is Elaine Matthews, and Elaine will be back in just a minute, okay?
Thank you.
All right, everybody, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. I wasn't going to play this song from the CD that I've got tonight. Void's Anatomy is the name of the band. The CD is called Shades of a Vast Moment. But the song is called The Dead Part of You. And for so many people, I think there are dead parts. And that's why I'm going to play it, because of what we've been talking about. But I play it with the hopeful caveat that the dead parts can be reawakened, okay? It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. This is Void's Anatomy, Marie Georges, wonderful music from Canada, on Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
You words fell over me.
Poets Anatomy. The song is called The Dead Part of You. It's from Shades of a Vast Moment. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN, Columbia, 89.5 FM. And KOPN and the Art in Healthcare Foundation is proud to co-sponsor the Youth Root Stage at the 49th Annual Art in the Park Festival. That's next weekend, June 2nd and 3rd at Stevens Lake Park. Performances will include local youth talent, live eagles, owls, falcons, puppets. I don't know if that means live puppets. Music, storytelling, balloons, break dancing, all kinds of stuff. Youth of all ages are invited to stop by the stage and the KOPN booth that will be located right there somewhere close. And the complete schedule for the Art in the Park celebration can be found on the web at artinthepark.missouri.org. Thanks to Art in Healthcare Youth Root Stage and the Art in Healthcare Foundation. All right, it's Mike, and you are listening to Radio Orbit. My guest is Elaine Matthews. You can find information about Elaine on the web at Amazon.com. She's got a wonderful book called The Heartbeat of Intelligence. It's available there. And you can link over there from my site as well over at MikeHagan.com. And you can also find information about the music that you've been hearing tonight on the website as well over there in the music archives, okay? All right, let's say hello again, and thank you for sticking around late into the nighttime to Elaine Matthews. Hi.
Hi, Mike.
What time is it now? It's like midnight? No.
No, it's only a little after 11 here.
11 o'clock, okay. All right, so where are we? I've got a number of things that have come up, but let's see if you want to move toward anything in particular.
Well, I want to point out something interesting about less brain sickness, which will show directly what's happening to our society.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people might not realize that when you cut off the right brain wisdom and you live only out of the left brain, that's the intellect.
Mm-hmm.
One of the functions of the left brain is to categorize and organize and make decisions about the information that comes in. It makes order out of chaos.
Right.
And one of the extreme things about organization and categorizing that happens is it winds up as secrecy. It becomes a sickness when it's entered into to such a full-blown degree as we have in this society today. It becomes a sickness of secrecy.
Mm.
And that's where secrecy, the desire for secrecy, which there's never any real need for, comes from. And what do we have today?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's nothing but secrets, right?
It's nothing but secrets. It's a sickness.
Mm.
It's a knee-jerk reaction almost.
You know, it's amazing. There are a couple things that come to mind. First of all, it's getting harder and harder to keep secrets. I mean, if you haven't noticed, you know.
Oh, yes.
I mean, for people out there that are trying to keep secrets, I mean, my gosh,
forget
you
it.
Must just be ready to pull your hair out, for God's sake.
Forget it.
You know, forget about it. But as an individual, I'm also a person that, although in my past, there was a time when I was very secretive.
Yeah.
And there
Me
are
too.
Certain things, I guess, I mean, I have to be honest. I mean, there are things that, you know, I have that are private things. But for the most part, I am not interested in secrets, you know.
No, not as they're imposed on us.
Mm, that's for sure, yeah.
And, yeah, not as they're imposed on us. That is definitely. But the reason, if people don't already know, most of your audience probably does, that this is deemed by astrologers, New Age astrologers, is the age of truth. The Aquarian age is the age of truth. It's the age in which nothing can be kept hidden.
You know, interestingly, it's the water sign, too. And then I think about the dolphins and whales again. That,
there you go.
You know?
There you go. Exactly. They are, oh, yes, that's a wonderful, wonderful analogy. But that's why we are unable to keep secrets. Now, those at the top are carrying their hair out, I'm sure.
Oh, my gosh.
Because they hate the Internet.
Oh, they must just. And it's a beautiful irony, though, because they're the ones that built it. Their greed betrayed them.
Unintended consequences.
Yeah, by the time they figured out what they had done, it was too late.
Well, because they don't have the intelligence.
No, and there's nothing they can do about it. I mean,
nothing they can do about it.
There's absolutely nothing. And all this talk about the web's in danger, forget about it, man.
Uh-uh.
Yeah.
And And believe me, if we didn't have the web, it would still come out some way.
Yeah, yeah, it's unstoppable what's happening. So.
I don't think they have a clue of the higher power that's at work here that is drawing all...
Well, they're getting a clue. I'll tell you what.
They certainly are.
Because something has happened, you know. I mean, a switch was flipped or something, but it wasn't long ago where things really shifted or something, and now things are just... I mean, at least in my observation, it really... And I talked to lots of different people from lots of different fields of endeavor or whatever. And, man, I mean, the message is very clear that something has shifted, and now, boy, it's sort of just hang on, I think.
I know. I see all the bad things. I hear all the bad things, and I stand back and I watch. What I'm watching for is the truth to come out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching for all of that to fall, and it is almost daily.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's so funny to watch people who suddenly blurt things out that they had no intention of blurting out the truth.
Right. Where'd that come from?
Yeah. They go, oh, dear. And these are public figures, some of them, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's... You know, when you build a web of deceit that's so complicated, eventually you get hosed by your own web, you know. I mean, I think that's happening in a lot of cases, too. I mean, you can't, you know, for anybody out there who's had experience lying, you know, the more you lie, the more complicated it gets. Pretty soon it gets pretty difficult to keep up with what the hell you're talking
about.
That's
right.
I think we're seeing a lot of that. I mean, you can't keep it up for forever, you know.
No.
Well, let's talk about wisdom. There are a couple things that you said earlier in the program that I'd like to sort of bring together. The first thing is difficulty. Lots of people, yourself included, have been through difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
Difficulty, whether it was required or not, you know, whether it was because our parents didn't know any better or whatever. You know, or just life throwing you curveballs, which happens to the best of us, right?
Right.
Difficulty, I'd like you to talk about that and the relationship to the heart, because in many cases it seems to me that people, children, whoever, who have been through very difficult times, they do one of two different things. They either basically die to it, and become a shell and live their life, you know, as a vacant person pretty much, or they make it through and they somehow transmute it into something, you know, better. And oftentimes those types of people become very strong, and the strength may be directly related to the level of difficulty or something.
I think so. Because I can look back in my own life, and we all of us have things in our lives we regret, and they say, oh, I'd like to go back and I'd like to change that, and if I hadn't married so-and-so, you know, and I thought to myself, well, when do I go back and change it? Because if I go back and change this or that, I wouldn't have my children, and so forth and so on.
Right.
But at this age, I can look back and I can say, honestly, that every single step, every mistake, and that's in quotes, that I made in my life brought learning, brought wisdom. Eventually, maybe not right at the moment, but when you can look back at the pattern,
right?
See the pattern of mistakes, the so-called mistakes, and I've come to the conclusion that at least for people who are on the path, there's no such thing as a mistake. It's learning.
Right, and it's a matter of how you handle the experience.
How you handle the experience.
What you do with it.
Exactly. Exactly, and that's where the wisdom comes in. And you do not have that wisdom unless you have a connection between the heart and the brain. Because the heart is the source of the wisdom, and the wisdom comes from a higher power.
So what is the typical reaction of a person without that connection when they go through difficulty? Do they just get mad and hateful?
Yes, they're mad and hateful, or they get depressed and have to go on medication because they don't understand, and they don't have the tools they think. They don't have the tools to cope and to, you know, equip them to handle it.
And that's a whole other trap that they enter then.
Oh, yes. Mm. And that's, once they get into the medication, it's almost a, you know, closed loop.
Mm.
But nothing's ever hopeless.
Right. I agree.
Nothing's ever hopeless. But, yes, that's true. The different ways of handling it. And I think I myself personally believe we live other lives, and that we come in with certain things learned already and are equipped with. People say we come in with baggage, but I think we come in with learning.
I had a guy in the air last week. He said, well, you know, when you go on a trip, you have to take some baggage.
Yeah,
you
got
to take some stuff with you. He said, otherwise, you're screwed, you know.
That's right. That's right.
So it's a matter of, like, what's in the bags, I think, right?
Exactly. That's a good way to put it.
Oh, man. All right. Let me ask you a question about music. What do you make of it? I mean, and is it tied into this whole business? A lot of people talk about music. I mean, music as otherworldly and outside of time and space, just like the heart and the mind connection can be sometimes.
Well, there is, to me, there is a certain music that is seemingly outside of time and certainly heart connected. There's music that is very cacophonous to the heart. It does not respond to it well.
So it's frequency-related things.
Yeah, that's right. It's frequency-related. But you do an infant, a fetus that is in the womb, you do it a great service when you play certain types of music, sacred chanting or classical music or some modern music. You know, if the in fact, I would even say the music of the Beatles would probably be very good to play to infants. You know, fetuses in the womb.
It's all about rhythm, sort of.
It's all about rhythm, but it's about vibrations.
Mm-hmm.
The rhythm and the vibration and what it's conveying to the heart.
Right.
Because everything goes to the heart. You know, the heart and the newborn and the fetus. It's just a little clump. After 3 days, it starts beating.
Well, we have this image up on my website that you were cool enough to send me a couple weeks ago. And it's maybe you could describe it. You know the one I'm talking about, the twins. And maybe you could talk a little bit about how one heart can have an effect on another.
Absolutely. I think that ultimately all hearts are connected. And I'll tell you why in a moment. But yes,
that's a really big statement that you just made. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's one heart. Mm-hmm. It is one heart. Mm-hmm. But that picture of two premature infants born, and the people who have not seen the picture, and chose them in the incubator, one was not expected to live. It was not doing well. And in our truly wise medical fashion, these twins were separated. Why they even separate them from the mother, I cannot understand, but they separate them from each other.
Right.
It's insane, but anyway.
Right, they've been together every moment of their existence. Yeah.
And they put them in separate incubators, and one was not doing well. So the nurse, she just disobeyed the hospital rules and put the one that was not doing well in the incubator with the one that was doing well. And even if that tiny, tiny little infant, threw its arm protectively and endearingly around her sister, the heart of the other one began to stabilize, and her temperature began to rise, and she lived. And it was one heart responding to another. But in this case, it happened to be the heart of twins.
Right.
They shared the same heart. But that leads me to my statement that we all share. Our hearts are all connected. Our individual heart has a connection to a higher dimension. Well, that higher dimension is one dimension. So it's one heart.
Mm-hmm.
And all of our hearts are connected.
Wow.
And when you put, I'm not sure if this, I can't tell you where this, I can't give you the data on this, but there was an experiment done where they put two hearts on, you know, plates, still beating, kept them alive, and they had a different heart rate at first, and then within a few minutes, they began to entrain.
Yeah, they synchronize, yeah.
And then synchronize.
Mm-hmm.
And every heart will do that.
Mm-hmm. That's remarkable.
Yeah, it is. So to me, the heart is everything. The heart is the heart of evolution, the heart of humanity, the heart of the planet.
You know, there's a lot of talk in a, you know, in a historical sense from poetry and from and from the artistic side of things for the most part, right? Mm-hmm. But many very wise people, men and women, in our past have told us this. They say it's the heart. It's the heart. It's the heart.
It's the heart.
And they didn't have the science or whatever that to back them up, but they knew perfectly well exactly what you're telling me.
They knew it intuitively. They knew it organically. They knew it in the same way that, now I've never had ayahuasca, but I imagine that it's the same way in which when you are having that experience and influence of ayahuasca, it's through the heart.
Well, now you bring up another topic that has come up in the chat room, and people actually ask exactly about that. They say, please ask Elaine's opinion on essentially what I call symbiosis with other species.
Yes.
Because I think that's what's happening. I don't think it's just a chemistry thing. I think that you're actually having a communication with the organism itself.
Oh, exactly.
And I've never had the ayahuasca experience personally either, but I've had serious psilocybin experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, for me, I don't need anything else. I mean, I know perfectly well in my own heart whether anybody else wants to buy into it or not, that's their own business,
right?
But in my own heart, I have a perfectly clear understanding of what's happening, and I'm privileged to be a part of it. And
yeah.
I mean, I think that this is one of the things that maybe the heart opens us up to. In other words, most of the people that I know who are stuffy, stiff shirt, constipated corporate types, you know, or something, they wouldn't come near 5 dried grams of psilocybin mushrooms.
Oh, no.
They would run for the door, right?
That's right.
But it's a real interesting thing because I tell people all the time, I say, well, look, what do you do for fun? You know, what do you do for entertainment? Or what do you do for, you know, when you're not working? Or, oh, I watch the television or I go to the ball game or whatever. I say, okay, or I read a book. Okay, I say, okay, how long, what's your favorite book? What are you reading right now? Okay, I'm reading Cosmos and Psyche by Richard Tarnas. Okay, how long, that's a big book. How long is it going to take you to read? It's going to take me a week. Well, all I'm asking you for is 5 hours. You give me 5 hours with something that is... That has a million years of history that's proven that it's not going to hurt you, you know, it's not going to harm you, in the long term. It's not a danger to your existence or your health. It might shake you up a little bit, you know, but you might need a little shaken.
It's only a gift from the goddess.
Exactly. And boy, it is amazing how few people are actually willing to go there.
Yeah, they turn tail and run.
Oh, my gosh. And so maybe you could talk a little bit about that, because people, at least some of the listeners of this show, recognize that there are, first of all, possibilities to have relationships with other species on the planet, and there are other species that are actually looking to help us and can actually provide benefit for us.
Well, I cannot speak from personal experience about psilocybin. I have never had it. But I can speak from personal experience about heart intelligence and the heart connection and how the full heart intelligence will allow us communication with other species,
mm-hmm.
with animal and plant species. And one of the things it does is put us in touch with, some people would call them nature spirits.
Mm.
Some people will see them. The person who's in touch with them will see them according to their lights, according to the way they can accept it, fairies, elves, whatever.
Right.
And, or nature spirits or devas, they're energy intelligences of the plant life, of the animal life. And when you have full heart intelligence, you are open to that communication, and you can learn so much
mm-hmm.
about the planet, about their species, about whatever, in a very, very loving way. Mm-hmm. I've had that experience myself.
Mm-hmm.
I have had these energy intelligences communicate with me, mm-hmm. and I see them as lights, or in my mind, I see them as lights. I don't see them out there with the physical eye,
mm-hmm.
but they reach through the heart into the mind and through the imagination. And I've had communication with them when I am at my most quiet, most peaceful.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say that, you know, when the heart can speak, or when the heart can be heard.
That's right. That's why daily I grow in the conviction that it is the heart, that spirit comes through the heart, spirit evolved the heart, spirit gave us the heart, whatever you want to call spirit.
Right.
It gave us the heart.
What do you make of all the heart trouble? You know, everyone with heart disease. I mean, is this exactly what we think it is? I mean, in other words, people, they have heart disease because
they're cut off from their hearts.
Because they're cut off from their hearts.
Exactly. Because they're cut off from their hearts.
I mean, we have more heart disease. It's something that didn't even exist, you know, or at least there's not a whole lot of reporting of it in the historical literature.
Right.
Until, you know.
Right. No, I think that's exactly it. They're cut off from their heart, and they don't understand, so they're under a great deal of stress. Trying to understand, trying to live without the wisdom of the heart.
Mm.
They don't even know they have the wisdom of the heart.
Right.
Most people, I would venture to say, don't meditate, don't get quiet, don't get still, they don't listen. But if you were to sit and meditate just on the heart, just in your mind, visualize the heart as a center of light in your body.
Mm-hmm.
Then you will soon begin to feel love. You will soon begin to get answers to things. Wisdom will come to you, maybe not right on the spot,
right.
But it will start showing up in your life.
Well, I think that's important, and maybe you could talk a little bit more about it, because at least as an individual, and I don't claim to be enlightened or anything else, I'm just looking at my own path, and I just basically say, well, I'm doing better now than I was.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. That's all we can say.
Right. But for me, it has taken, you know, in my own, you know, personal work or whatever, I mean, it took 5-7 years before I even sort of, I mean, it takes a long time, maybe.
Yes.
You know, I mean, you got to commit. It's almost like any relationship, it requires... You got to really want it, I guess.
You have to really want it, but being quiet and still, of course, is wonderful, and that's part of it. And that's
my biggest problem.
Yeah, I know. I understand in a busy life. But think about the direction of your life, Mike, and what you want. Think about how you now feel about your children and your life in relation to your children. Think about the people that you bring on your program, and I'm just amazed at the wisdom of so many of the people that come on your program, and some of the other talk shows, the internet talk shows where they come on in this new age.
Oh, it's amazing. The ability to share information is just outrageous.
But you see, all the time that you're doing that, you're connecting with your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're doing it out of the heart. You're doing it for truth. You want truth. You're pursuing truth. The heart knows that. And all of this is connected with your heart.
Right.
So it is. You don't have to be still and quiet in every minute of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can set aside time for some meditation,
right.
It doesn't have to be emptying your mind. It can be music, as you started to talk about a few minutes ago. Music is a wonderful vehicle to the heart.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wonderful. I agree. And I think that there's a little bit of snobbery about it that I think is sort of unnecessary. In other words, whatever makes your heart sing.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's the Beatles or the Monkees or if it's Chopin or Mozart or whatever. Whatever makes you go, yeah, I mean...
Oh, absolutely. If it makes you want to get up and dance, you know.
Right, right.
There, in fact, there's a wonderful CD out called Shaman's Dream, which is shamanic. Awesome. Have you heard that?
No, but I love the sound of it.
Well, I'll send you the details on it. And it's a shamanic beat. It's just a shamanic beat.
Oh,
and
drum,
I cannot hear that without, I either meditate on it and I find myself doing this dance out on the Milky Way, or I'm up, literally up on my feet doing this shamanic dance. It's just wonderful. So yes, you're absolutely right. It does not have to be classical music. It does not have to be sacred chanting. Whatever moves your heart.
All right. Okay. All right. Let's take a little break here, okay?
Okay.
All right. We'll come back, and I've got a couple more questions for you. I think some good ones about 2012 and some other things. So we'll talk about the future a little bit, okay?
Okay.
All right. We'll come back, everybody, with Elaine Matthews. It's Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My friend Ruth just waltzed in the door here. She'll be playing some good music for you in about half an hour. Her show is called Crash Landing. And she'll be crashing in here, like I say, in about 30 minutes, and you can stick around for Ruth's show. In the meantime, there's some good music from my friend Marie Georges. The band is called Void's Anatomy, and this song is called, I shouldn't even try, L'état égo de ou.
Разницы делают
All right, everybody, that's Void's Anatomy. And it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. On the web, you can find us at kopn.org. Catch the live stream from there. My own personal website at MikeHagan.com. And the music that you're listening to tonight from Void's Anatomy, you can find information about them connecting over from my site or directly at Void's, V-O-I-D-S, Anatomy, VoidsAnatomy.com. All right, it's Mike, and we've got Elaine Matthews on the line with us here from her place in Washington State. Elaine, where are you exactly?
No, it's Northern California.
Oh, Northern California. Why do I keep saying Washington State?
I don't know.
I've been saying that to everybody all day.
I'm very near Mount Shasta.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a cool place.
It's a very cool place, and I hope to be moving up there in the next year or so, because closer to the mountain, let's put that way. You can't live right on the mountain.
Uh-huh.
That's national forest.
Is that a volcanic mountain?
Oh, it's not dormant either.
Yeah.
But
well,
it's supposed to be very powerful. But can I say something about music before
please
we go on?
Yeah.
Because it started my mind remembering that through my life, I have found an affinity to every time I hear original, authentic ethnic music of any culture.
Huh.
Chinese, Japanese, Mid-East, any Eastern music, Egyptian mm-hmm music, American Indian, Native American, Australian Aboriginal, I don't care what it is.
Right.
If it's the original ethnic music that I'm hearing, my heart just goes wild with the response. It's so beautiful to me.
What do you make of it?
I make of it the fact that the music came from the heart to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Came from the people to begin with. It wasn't composed. It wasn't set out to make money,
mm-hmm,
or to get a label.
Right.
None of that. It was from the heart. They wrote music about what they believed in and what moved them, and some of it may even have come about being written because of the mind altering substance that they were taking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, to me, I don't think I've heard an ethnic music, folk music, of any kind that my heart hasn't responded to.
Awesome. Amazing.
And open to.
Yeah, so, and it, there's something there because, like you say, I mean, it's cross-cultural, so it's not a matter of taste. It's
no.
Just,
No, I have very eclectic taste in music.
Hmm.
Very eclectic. And but I have I just have a heart response to the ethnic music. Original.
Very interesting. Music's funny. It's wonderful, and I'm a huge advocate and of listening to it and performing it, playing it, learning it, do whatever, you know. I mean,
yes,
just sit around, bang a drum, whatever.
Right.
But it's funny how personal it is.
Yes.
It's people don't think of music like art, like they do some like visual art or something.
No.
I don't think they think, well, you know, you should like all of it or something. But it's funny because doing radio, you find out really quickly that, you know, that your taste isn't the same as everybody else.
Yes, right.
Because I have times when I play music where I get, you know, lots of very good response. Then I have times where everybody hates it, you know. And I think, oh, man, that was the best stuff I found in a long time. And then you get a reaction that maybe you weren't hoping for, but it's based on your own perception or whatever, you know.
Yeah, it's based on your own heart.
Right.
It's your heart response.
Okay, here's the biggie. We got about 15 minutes, okay?
Okay.
So I want to finish up talking a little bit about the future, and we can wrap up with anything that you'd like to add. But the biggie is this. Not only tonight, but always these days, the big questions that are coming up on my radio show are, okay, everybody's got good things to say, everybody thinks that things are changing, everybody thinks that there are great changes on the horizon, and 2012 and all this business, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then they say, well, looking at the current picture, and then factoring in what probably is going to have to happen in order to get what everybody else is talking about, well, things are going to have to start to change, and really quickly.
Yes.
And those changes are probably going to be profound.
Profound.
So maybe you could talk about if you think that that's really the case, or if you think that that's silliness, or but just what do you think is going on, and what do you think the future holds for us with the intelligence of the heart?
I think it is a very profound thing, and I think it's all of the above. I think that we are headed into, and in fact we're already involved in, a tremendous energy shift as we head towards 2012, whatever 2012 is. And in fact, I agree with you. You said something about the shift has already started, and apparently, according to astronomers, we have already lined up at the center of the galaxy as of 1998 or 99, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah, it's not something that happens in a moment. It's a window that lasts quite
right.
a long time, actually. Yeah.
So what's happening now to us is all the outcome of that energy which is pouring out. Now, this is just me and my view on it. The energy that's pouring out to us now from the center of the galaxy is causing a great change in our DNA, and it's not necessarily overnight. It may be happening slowly, but the human DNA is changing, and I think, frankly, that the human DNA is changing only for those people who have the heart connection. They have the heart intelligence. No matter how, it may be just the budding heart intelligence, they may just be able to begin to realize it now, and they're working on it or whatever, becoming aware of it. But if they're aware of it, they're already starting into it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're already participating in that energy. And the energy for them, for us, can be only positive. But for those people who don't have that heart intelligence, they don't have a clue there, they're not going to make that connection. It can lead to insanity.
What if they're the ones with their fingers on the button, though?
Well, I don't worry about that anymore because I think that there's a greater force.
That's the answer.
There
I mean, that's the answer I was looking for, at least.
Yeah.
Because I mean, what other answer could there be?
No, there is a greater force that we are a part of, and it's calling to us.
Because something is... I've been thinking for the last 6 years, you know, since the whole 9/11 business,
uh-huh.
that, you know, for the first couple of years, I sort of was with everybody else.
Yeah,
I was following along, going, when's the next terrorist attack going to happen,
uh-huh.
and when is the nuclear bomb going to go off or whatever,
uh-huh.
and it didn't happen, and it
uh-huh.
didn't happen, and I'm actually reasonably confident now. That it's not going to happen.
No.
And I don't know why, but something has intervened.
That's right.
And I don't know what it is, and I don't know. I have no idea what's happening, but I have a sense that we made it through. And now, like we've been talking about all night, it's just a matter of sort of seeing how the whole thing unfolds. But something new is coming.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I think that we have already made it through the crisis.
Hmm.
Now, we have not made it through totally through the gate,
right,
or that
yeah.
sort of thing, but we've made it through the crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this whole beginning age is about, is bringing to light the dross,
mm-hmm.
bringing to light the negativity, bringing to light all the stuff that we've kept hidden, so we can see it
mm-hmm.
and see what it's done, get rid of it. And we have the capacity to get rid of it, and that's what we're doing right now. But it's all happening on another level that we may not be consciously aware of.
Right. I've had many people that I talk to say, you know, things happen on the spiritual level before they're acted out in the physical.
Yes.
And that things take place in that realm, and then they just sort of unfold here the way they unfold, and it's sort of hard to say how they may unfold. But the real business happens in a place that most people may not even recognize and certainly aren't that familiar with.
Right.
You know, the places where the shamans visit.
Absolutely.
You know, my friend Kent Stedman, I have this wonderful friend who's not far from you. He's a little bit further north. He actually is in Washington.
Yeah, he's in Washington.
But he said, you know, he actually said, and this was around the 9/11 time. I think it was shortly afterwards, because he realized that something very significant had happened, and he thought... I think, like I think now, although I didn't believe it at the time, I think he thought, well, yeah, this is the end, not the beginning of the trouble. He sort of saw 9/11 as the end of,
absolutely.
As sort of a bell ringer of,
uh-huh.
okay, now the thing's on the way out. But regardless, it seemed like if something were going to happen more or worse or whatever, there was no reason to wait. And for whoever's behind it, regardless of who's behind it.
But even if they had wanted something more to happen, they have wanted something more to happen, it wouldn't have.
Right. It just seems like something is not allowing it to happen.
That's right. I think that the power that we're talking about here is so great. It's so profound. It is the universe, if you want to call it that. It's the heart of the universe. It's the heart of it's love, but a love so profound that we can't even begin to understand it, but that we are part of it is what we're feeling.
Right. Well, it's something else, and it like we've been talking about all night, it really is quite something to be a part of and to recognize it and, just sort of watch the whole thing unfold. And I guess for the pragmatists in me and for people out there, you have to live your life in the meantime and do the best with what you've got and try to make it better for yourself and your family and those around you without harming yourself and the rest of the critters that you're sort of sharing the place with.
Well, that's very true. But if you recognize, carry that even farther, and recognize the heart and what is coming through the heart and where that's coming from, what informs the heart, informs the universe, informs all of us. And when you turn to that with trust and you say, yes, I need help. The world needs help. I'm open to it. And I'm open to helping the world. It's amazing how some of your problems and your troubles will start to, you'll find out how to reconcile them for one thing. Or they'll melt away.
Or become recognized as insignificant compared to the greater problems or problems of others, perhaps.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they become into perspective.
Right.
And it's all through the heart. To me, it's just listen. Just listen, and you don't even have to be in meditation to listen. Just become aware in your. As you're walking around, all of a sudden you remember the heart, and you say, "Okay, I'm listening." The next thing you know, an answer comes about something.
Mm-hmm. Elaine, a quick question here before we head out.
Mm-hmm.
What about your gut? What about your stomach? Your bowels, your innards. There's lots of talk about this as well, about how your gut instinct and the relationship of this to decision making and intelligence as well. Are you interested in any of that?
Yes, because to me it's intuition. I don't so much call it gut feeling anymore. It's my intuition. And if you learn to listen to your intuition, and intuition comes from the heart. I mean, everything comes back to the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And if you literally are having bowel problems and stomach problems and digestion and all of that sort of thing, you're not listening to something you should be listening to.
Yeah, the body sends messages, basically.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And another thing too, those of us that are seeking and searching, and that we feel we do have at least the beginning of heart intelligence, we are being reached. We're being taught. We're being guided. We're being encouraged all the time without even realizing it.
Yeah, I didn't know him personally. I wish I would have. But Joseph Campbell, I always call him my old friend because he seemed like a friend because he was so awesome. But he always used to talk about being helped by hidden hands.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly,
and it's exactly what happens.
Uh-huh.
We have whether it comes to you in the guise of little spirit helpers or sheer knowingness through all of a sudden you open up joy because you know something.
Right.
It doesn't matter how it comes to you. It's the same spiritual energy.
Amazing.
And we are very, very special, Mike. The human race is very, very special. And nature, Goddess, guys, does not want to waste us. She's pulling us through the gate all the time.
Mm-hmm. I feel the same as you. And I think that, nobody said it was easy, but our ancestors made it through a lot of difficulty, and we're going to make it through too, I have a feeling.
Absolutely.
Elaine, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, it's been fun.
All right. Well, I'm going to tell everyone one more time. You can check out her book. Her name is Elaine Matthews, and the book is called The Heartbeat of Intelligence. It's wonderful, and I thank you so much for... Elaine and I got in touch just via the wonders of the Internet. And it's wonderful how these things work out. But it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to talking with you more, and I hope you keep sharing your goods and your words with as many people as you can.
Okay, Mike, thank you.
All right, take care of yourself, all right?
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. Elaine Matthews, thanks one more time to Elaine. And thanks to all of you for listening to the program tonight. Say a few things here to finish up. Well, we had some technical difficulty earlier in the program. Looks like that's been worked out. If you lose Ruth halfway through her program, you know it's perhaps expected this evening. We do have a new transmitter that's going to be installed very soon, and we're very excited to have that up and running. It should give us a lot of things that we don't really have the advantage of having right now. So, anyway, I also didn't get a chance to do space weather. I'll do a short one here. Full moon, Thursday night. Be there or be square. What else? The news. In the news, the forum. Go over to my forum. I haven't been updating the news very much on the website because it seems like all the interesting news that I come across ends up getting posted in my forum anyway. So I may just change the link and send the news link over to the forum. Maybe that'll encourage other people to go over there and join up anyway. So at any rate, go over there and see if you want to take a look around and read some of the things that people are talking about. But there's always interesting things happening over there at the website, in the forum, on the chat room, whatever. And you can go over and take a look at it for yourself, all right? Okay, wonderful time tonight. Thank you to Elaine one more time. Thanks to everybody for listening, and we'll come back next week with Gary David. Gary David has written a book called Orion and the Hopi. So we'll talk about the Hopi and the heavens, the connection between the two of them, and we'll talk about some other stuff that we missed out on tonight. And, of course, the usual stuff. All right, so enjoy yourselves in between. June will be here. We have the big solstice celebration for people who are still listening, if you're still sticking around with me. My annual, or our annual, solstice celebration will be held on June 23rd out at our place, the Shire, as I call it, out at the Shire in Roachport. And anybody who listens to this program is welcome to come. So just get a hold of me in between now and June 23rd, and we'll figure out how to make sure you guys can come. All right? Okay, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We'll hear one more from Void's Anatomy. We've been listening to music all night from a wonderful CD that's called Shades of a Vast Moment, Marie Georges, and this last one is called Our Morning. Thanks to Marie for making wonderful music and for sharing it with us, to Elaine Matthews and her book, and everybody for listening to the program. It's Mike. You've been listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. Stick around for Ruth and Crash Landing in just a few minutes.
Thousand sparks are floating.